Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, December 28th, 2008. I'm Sam Minter. I've got with me Yvonne Bo. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And I just wanted to start with another admission, and I should say an admission. And it's probably been obvious to anybody who's been listening to the show for the last, since the election. I don't know about you, but I'm still sort of a little bit lost not having an election around. I mean,
I gotta agree. During the last half hour, I was looking at different topics and different things to talk about, and I was grasping a little bit at straws here, a little bit.
Because the election provided a nice little structure. You know,
right.
Every week you knew what was going on. You knew it's like there one or two other things in the world might have been going on, but then you knew, okay, we're going to talk about whatever primaries coming up next and whatever the candidates had said in the last week. And, you know, it is very clear. You always, perhaps we were a little bit too myopic talking about just the election, but I mean, it gave a very, there was a pattern to things. And since then, it's just sort of like, what's going on this week? I don't know. Stuff.
Yeah, I know. So it's been a little bit like that. But, it's almost the end of 2008, you know, so we could conceivably
do a year in review.
Yes, we can.
You know, and I was thinking about that, too, and I was thinking, you know, should we do, like, the little, you know, McLaughlin-style awards and, like, you know, Politician of the Year and, you know, things like that or predictions for 2009? And I'm like, you know, I'd have to think.
Well, yeah. I can come up with a couple. I got a couple. Speaking of 2008, I mean, you know, well, let's see. What were the outstanding or, you know, let's see, no, maybe not outstanding, but most relevant events of 2008. We go back to the beginning of the year. I think, first thing is just the destruction of the American economy as we know it. That's been a 2008 event.
It's been an ongoing spiral, yep.
It's been an ongoing spiral. We had the election 2008.
Yep, and you had you essentially had yeah, the two major components. You had the Republican primary, but okay, whatever. But you had the Democratic primary process, which went on forever, and then you had the general election, and both of which had a number of very interesting twists and turns.
Yes, they did. And, the economic thing, I mean, it's gone through a whole bunch of different stages and ensnared different people. The one thing is that originally, you know, people thought, well, it's just the real estate and the banks, and then it just started ensnaring everything. The most recent things right now is just retailers were the most recent bailout beggars, retailers, commercial builders. I don't know. Those were the last two that I heard. I think somebody else was begging for a bailout, and I almost collapsed laughing, but I was just like, okay, this is just insane.
So, we got the two major things, you know, we got the economy melting down, and we got the election. Any other, like, annual things to highlight? I mean, those
We had the iPhone 3G.
iPhone 3G, yeah, absolutely. That is the fact that
Apple right now has become the biggest seller of smartphones in the fourth quarter. I thought that was an interesting one. Let's see what else interesting happened during the year.
We had a few international things go on. The invasion of Georgia.
Right. We had the invasion of Georgia. Fizzled out, but, you know, it was an invasion.
And they didn't even get to Atlanta.
No, they did not. You know, they kind of stopped well away, unbelievably so. Gosh, what the heck else? Anything else really happened?
I'm sure there were. I mean, we had the attack in Mumbai.
A milestone was broken in the last couple of weeks in terms of technology. The fact that we actually finally... notebook computers finally eclipsed desktop computers as the biggest personal computing device.
You know, I saw that, in the last week or whenever it happened, and I got to admit, my initial thought was, wait, didn't that happen years ago?
Happened already. Yeah, I know, but it actually, I was surprised too, but it actually happened this year, the last couple of weeks.
And I'll tell you my own thoughts on that. I remember about, my current home computer is a desktop. Before that, I had a laptop, and I remember when I bought that laptop, after having it about a week, I was like, this is amazing. What the hell was I ever thinking getting desktops before? I'm never going to get anything but a laptop again because right. This does absolutely everything I need. It's much right. More convenient, blah, blah, blah. Then 3 years later or 4 years later, whatever it was, I get a desktop. Yes. And now as I'm contemplating replacing the one I have now, hopefully sometime in the next 12 months, I'm thinking of a desktop again. And I'm like, what's going on here? And, you know, and I realize there are a couple things here. One is that I have a laptop for work. So, like, most of my needs to do things in a portable way, like being able to go to the couch and still surf the web, I can do that on my work computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, maybe I'm not going to be surfing porn on my work computer for obvious reasons.
I would hope not.
But, you know, if I want to, like, read the news and, you know, stuff like that, I mean, my employer is fairly, you know, relaxed about, you know, when you're not actively doing work, they have no problem with you doing other random stuff with your computer, as long as it's not inappropriate. And so I want the desktop because I've got a lot more drive space. I have all my stuff that doesn't fit on a laptop hard drive
much
anymore. A much bigger screen. And for the same price, you still get a lot more power.
Yes.
And so now, if I did not have a laptop from work, would my evaluation be different? Would I be looking into, yeah, I want a laptop, and then I'm going to get a big network attached storage box or something to keep all my stuff in, separate from my computer? I might be. I might be looking at that kind of stuff instead. But, you know, anyway, so yes, laptops eclipse desktops for the first time. And I even though I'm in a desktop mode right now, I fully understand that because for so many things, it's so much more convenient.
Well, so right now I am looking, and Yahoo has a 2008 year review. It's kind of stupid, but anyway, I'll go through this. Well, it's got a couple of tiny interesting nuggets. Top 10 searches for 2008 at Yahoo. Okay,
Britney.
All right, Britney was number one. Number two was World Wrestling Entertainment. I have no idea why. Number three was Barack Obama. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Number four was Miley Cyrus, you know, yeah. Hannah Montana. Okay.
Yeah.
Number five is RuneScape. What the hell is that? Do you know? Okay. All right. Neither do I. Okay. Number six was Jessica Alba. She's hot, babe. Okay. I know that. number seven, Naruto? What the hell's Naruto? Okay, no idea either. Okay, all right, I'm here. Number eight was Lindsay Lohan. Number nine, Angelina Jolie. And number 10, American Idol. Those are the top 10 searches for 2008. I don't know what that tells me about people searching Yahoo. I don't know what to think.
So here's an interesting distinction. Yes. I'm looking at Google's end of year 2008 zeitgeist.
Okay.
And so, just looking. Okay, so they have fastest rising terms as compared to 2007.
Okay.
So like that means like, yeah, things like Britney that are at the top every year.
Yep.
Less so. So they're fastest rising in the U.S. and they have similar lists for all the countries they're in. But in the U.S., Obama, Facebook,
okay.
AT&T,
mm-hmm.
iPhone,
okay.
YouTube, Fox okay. News,
mm-hmm.
Palin,
mm-hmm.
Beijing 2008. There were Olympics. We didn't. I completely forgot.
Oh yeah, that's right. We forgot about the Olympics. Dope.
David Cook,
mm-hmm.
and Surf the Channel.
Surf the Channel. Surf the Channel. What the fuck does that mean?
I have. Yeah, you could. I guess you can go Google it.
Okay, correct.
And then they've got a variety of other top of mind searches in categories: people who died, the economy, people who typed into Google "who is blank,"
okay.
And the number one was "who is Obama" for those who were living under a rock.
Yes.
Number 10 was "who is Martin Luther."
Okay, interesting. The Protestant founder, Martin Luther?
Either that or people who are confused about Martin Luther King, but either way, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know why that's particularly hot in 2008, but...
Yeah, that's why I'm like, huh?
And then there's the how-to X that people searched for. Number one is how to draw.
Boy, I should look that one up.
Number two is how to kiss.
Okay.
Number 10 is how to spell.
Interesting.
Anyway, so...
Well, I'm assuming they probably were trying to spell a word, but they were typing how to spell X. I mean, not just how to spell. I would be guessing. Interesting. How to kiss. Yeah, okay. All right. I don't know. How the hell did I learn to kiss? I think it was trial and error, to be quite honest with you.
Okay. I imagine so.
Yes. I don't think I got any training.
You didn't have a textbook?
Not particularly. No, not on kissing. I read on sex, not on kissing. Well, you know, like, think about it. I'm surprised at that query. Usually, you know, you get articles and stuff and whatever talk about sex positions, things you do, blah, 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 blah.
You know, just looking at these lists, I'm pretty sure Google cleaned them up.
You think?
I think so.
Hmm. Okay, good point. Probably so. Okay, let's see. What else I got here? Top 10 news, it says here. Now, this is according to Yahoo, okay? Anyone who has watched the stock market or presidential polls knows 2008 was a year of highs and lows. Politics and pocketbooks dominated both news search, but wild weather was also. Hurricanes was number one search. Boy, Kaylee and Casey Anthony. And I know I said that, oh boy, and it sounds like I'm, you know, dismissing the death of a little girl. See, my problem isn't so much that. It's that there are a lot of little girls that die during the year. For some reason, I guess this story was sexier than all the other ones.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so we decided to pay attention to this one.
That's your typical cute white female gets all the attention. All of the, you know, dozens of other folks who disappear or are killed, blah, blah, blah. In similar circumstances, but aren't cute white female, never get the attention.
Never get any attention, exactly. That's what I, you know, that's why I'm scoffing at this. Number three was the 2008 election. You know, it's only number three here. You know, I mean, Kaylee and Casey Anthony, according to this, beats out the election, which honestly
just
is
kind of sad.
Sad, yes. Number four is Pakistan, which I'm surprised would make number four. Number five, pregnant man? Was there a pregnant man?
Yes, there was a pregnant man this year.
Ooh, there was? Okay, all right.
It was a woman who had a sex change, but still had the internal organs of a woman and was artificially inseminated. Anyway.
Okay, all right. Number six, China. Number seven, Iraq. Number eight, Shelley Malil?
No idea.
Okay, neither do I. Number nine, Patrick Swayze? Oh, I know Patrick Swayze is dying of cancer, but I'm like, it's the number nine news story?
Apparently so. Okay, hurry, do number 10, because we're out of time for the second.
Number 10, Afghanistan.
Okay, so, we're out of time for this segment. We'll be right back in a second, and maybe we'll talk about some current stuff since we've been doing all the year in review stuff. We will be right back.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then, let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Just a quick interruption from Future Sam here. In the next segment, I refer a lot to the West Bank. Of course, the events going on were not really in the West Bank. They were in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip. I'm really not stupid, and I really was paying attention. I just had a bit of a brain fart, you know, so sue me. Anyway, here's the segment. Okay, we're back. I wanted to bring up just a few things from this actual week, and I don't know how far they're going to go, but one is I just sort of feel like I have to bring up over the last 24 hours or so as we record this, the situation in the West Bank has heated up again.
Yes.
So basically, if I get the summary correct, Israel has started attacking a variety of places in the West Bank that they believe are, strongholds of the folks that are making attacks on Israel. And of course, they're doing this in a fairly large scale way. There have been lots of civilians killed as well, et cetera, et cetera. Then Hamas and the folks in the West Bank are vowing revenge. And once again, we're in sort of the heated spiral that tends to typify the region.
But is this really any different from what's been happening? I mean, you know, maybe it's not the same spot, the same people, situation.
It's a different scale. I mean, of course, the same thing has been going on in this region forever. But apparently, the scale of these particular attacks on the West Bank in terms of the number of people killed, etc., is the highest rate of this sort of thing in several decades.
Right. Now that's my point. I mean, what I mean, it's happened before. I mean, it hasn't happened recently that it's escalated to this level. But yes, it certainly did escalate higher than before. But it is still a continuation. It's an escalation on something that obviously, I mean, has been happening.
Well, fundamentally, you get tired of hearing about it. I mean, it's like the Israeli-Palestinian situation, you know, has basically been roughly. I mean, there have been some significant changes, but I mean, our entire lifetime, we're in our 30s. It's been like this.
Yes.
I mean, and considerably earlier than that. I mean, basically, ever since the State of Israel was created, this situation has been going on in one way, shape, or form. And yes, the exact set of things that are going on differs somewhat. What's happening right now is a little bit different than what was happening 10 years ago. But fundamentally, you still got the same dynamic going on. And yeah, it's hard. I mean, I know there are lots of people who are very personally involved in the situation. For me, it's hard to get, like, too exercised about it because it's just sort of a, there they go again.
Listen, I'm 38 right now. When I was 16, I went to Georgetown. I think it was 15 or 16. I think it was probably 15. Went to Georgetown University on an international relations seminar. Georgetown has an excellent foreign services school, for those of you who don't know that. And, I mean, they're one of the ones that draw a lot of people that go into service in the State Department. A lot of people are drawn from that school. So I went to an international relations seminar when I was 15. I was very interested in the topic. And, we had a discussion on Palestine at the time, and we had a discussion with certain people representing the PLO at the time. We had representatives from PLO, and I can't remember what other groups were there. But, you know, it's like, you know, I still remember that discussion, first of all, because number one was, you know, especially with the news media, at a time and even today, it was a little bit difficult to get really the point across of what the position from the Palestinian side was. And I think it was it was very revealing to listen to their grievances and some of their things. But the truth of the matter is that if I go and I look at what their grievances are right now, what they're looking for, what's happening, it's the same shit. It hasn't fucking, it's barely budged. Have there been some changes in the specifics and this and that and whatever? Yes. But honestly, it's the same fucking thing. Still, 20, how many years now?
20-some.
20-some years. And I mean, you know, this. And it's just like, honestly, it seems like nobody gets tired of it. You know, that's one of the things that frustrates me about this. It just seems like, you know, they would just rather pound each other to a pulp continuously and not arrive at any resolution of this, you know? And, you know, I don't think that, obviously, U.S. policy in the Middle East made it any better in the last, especially since in the Bush administration. I mean, it made it significantly worse. I think that during the 90s, the combination of George Bush Sr. and President Clinton had made significant strides in trying to resolve some of the issues. But honestly, the war in Iraq and other policies, especially at the beginning of the Bush administration, in which they pretty much flat out said that they couldn't give a flying fuck about what was happening to Palestine, you know, really made things a lot worse. And so, you know, we, you know, back really at where we started from, you know. It's just, you know, really ridiculous, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, sometimes that's the way things are. Civil conflicts, internal conflicts are like that. I mean, your parents, you know, when you were a child, you were in Mozambique, and, you know, that Mozambique and the countries in Africa, I mean, internal conflicts in that area lasted also just as long and is not as long. I mean, you can go through a list of countries. Somalia, you know, what else? Zimbabwe right now. I don't know. The list, but even Pakistan right now. The list goes on and on and on. You know, it's utterly frustrating, but it's honestly, you know, you keep talking about it and recycle it, you know, you hear it again and again, and you're like, oh, more bombings? Oh, well, back to the news. I mean, I know it's a callous attitude in certain instances, but after a while, you just get bored by it.
I mean, it depends how long a historical context you're willing to take as well. I mean, for instance, Iraq, I saw early in the year, I saw a long article basically comparing the current situation in Iraq to the British occupation of Iraq in the early part of the 20th century.
Yes.
And showing how many similarities there were between the two situations. And as they say, you know, history repeats, blah, 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 and it's...
Especially kudos who pay no attention to it.
yes, but, you know, it's just... It's very easy to turn a blind eye to some of these areas because they've been going on for so long, because they seem intractable. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, I mean, they're probably some of the areas that need the most attention to sort of, you know, I don't know. In the situation, in these kinds of situations, you sort of want to, I don't know. It's so tempting to just say, you know, nuke the whole damn place, you know?
Okay, that's a little bit radical.
Oh, okay, well, I guess that's why I'm not president. No.
Yes.
No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you know, they're disputing over this. They're disputing over this piece of land.
If you never heard about it again, you'd be happy. Okay,
yeah, or you know, they're all both having disputes over this piece of land and how they live. So. You know, kick them both out of the place, make it a World Heritage Park settle them both on different sides of Antarctica. You know,
I was gonna be a little bit more radical. I said, the first colonists to Mars are being sent out right now. Look, here we go. We're sending one of the groups off. We're gonna settle this right now. We created a nice little colony. Here you go. Knock yourself out. You know, we'll hear from you later. Okay, you know.
Yes, excellent. So, I guess switching topics real quick. I think it's been a couple of weeks since we talked, so I think since the last time I spoke to you, whatever's actually happening with the automakers is happening.
Well, yes. I mean, one thing is that it finally happened. Even though Congress decided not to approve a bailout, the Bush administration figured out a way to finagle some money to the automakers, which buys them.
And I just want to mention, you know, I talked about this while it was still a prospect of, you know, this being another example of, you know, executive overreach against the legislature. And it's clearly the TARP bill authorizing the first set of money, which is what's being used here in part.
Yes. You know,
it was intended.
Not intended for this.
Well, it was not intended for this, but the way the law was actually written did not preclude it.
Right.
And that's true. This is another area where, you know, I remember at the time it was happening, I'm like, you know, anything that's rushed through like this is going to have lots of unintended consequences, and it's not being done carefully. It's going to be a mess. And this is exactly one of the things that happens there is, you know, basically you just gave, you know, the administration and the Treasury Secretary a big blank check to do whatever the fuck they wanted with. And so here you go. Now, you could also argue, of course, that the administration is doing the will of the Congress, because a majority in both houses were in favor of this. It just couldn't get past the Senate because of the filibuster.
Well, but I'll tell you this, and I do think that what happened at the end was the fact that, okay, it was politically impalatable to do, yet everybody wanted it, but they didn't actually wanted to be seen to vote for it. So you got the lame duck administration to do it on their own and take the heat and basically not put the heat on everybody else who would have had to vote for it and then gone back to their districts and get ripped apart because they voted for it.
Yeah, okay? But that just shows how broken things is. That's just complete bullshit.
I agree. But I'm not disputing that. But I'm just saying that I think that's what in the end it wound up happening. You know, it's like nobody wanted to take the heat for this. And so, you know, why not lay it off on the lame ducks?
Well, and of course, what they did really was a partial thing that basically kicks the ball down the road to the Obama administration. You know,
because this is a minor stopgap. This just buys GM a couple of months. That's it. You know, and kicks it over to the new administration. You know, now, having said that, and maybe, you know, we're almost coming up on a break. Having said this, you got to understand that the overall retail situation in the U.S. has deteriorated over to such an extent that even Toyota announced that they lost the money. Okay. Yep. Now, Toyota obviously is far more financially solid than GM is. There's no saying that Toyota is about to go under anytime soon. However, the fact that Toyota wound up losing money because demand decelerated so quickly really started to the point that Toyota went and actually was supportive of the bailout of the big three, because they pretty much said, you know what? If they fail, the suppliers fail, we use the same suppliers, you disrupt this entire supply chain, we're going to be just as toast as they are. And they're like, now all of a sudden, you know, unexpectedly, they came out in support of it. I honestly got to admit that I did not expect to hear them actually have an opinion one way or another, to be quite honest with you, you know, but I'm surprised that they came out for it, you know, because of that. So, I mean, but it just shows how dismal a retail environment we are in overall. I mean, just,
well, right. You speak about the automakers, but of course the reports came out this week that retail in general was, yeah, down very significantly,
Even a company based in Seattle, apparently, that announced that had excellent results for Christmas. But
yeah, I can't speak about that. But yes.
But other than that, I mean, I was just, you know, I can speak about it because I read it in the press. But you know, that just, you know, other than some company in Seattle, whose name I will not mention, that said that their retail results were spectacular. You know, but in general. If you take that out and you go and you put Walmart, Target, I don't know about Target, but Walmart I know also had a very good fourth quarter. But most other retailers, traditional retailers, had an abysmal Christmas season. I mean, it was abysmal.
Well, one of the things that I would point out, and then we do need to take a break, is just... I vowed, you know, not to set foot in a physical store between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I did end up violating that a couple of times, not to go shopping, but for other things. But the one thing that was noticeable, and I heard other people speak about this too, the malls were not crowded.
The malls, well, I'm not going to agree with that one.
Around here, the malls were not crowded.
Well, I don't know. I guess I heard that from other areas. I will tell you that here, I went to the mall a couple of times, and the parking lots were full. I mean, with people parked, I mean, on top of the medians and stuff. But I will say that having been there last year, certainly was not as full as last year.
The handful of times I went to the mall, and I admit I did not go at peak times. I went like Tuesday during the day and crap like that. But it was you couldn't tell it was Christmas season. Let's put it that way. Anyway, we need to take a break. We'll be right back.
Last night I was digging in the cemetery. Up jumps a man, all black and hairy.
Hollywood travels to Western Pennsylvania for Monster Bash, the world's meeting place for fans of classic horror and science fiction films.
This upcoming Monster Bash will feature a film festival of classic horror, a gigantic ballroom jammed with vendors of classic monster movie memorabilia, and autograph signings by the stars.
You can meet Ron Chaney,
Lon Chaney's grandson,
Butch Patrick of the Munsters, Lou Ferrigno, the TV and the movie voice of the Hulk, Rico Browning, who played the creature from the Black Lagoon in three classic movies, Chris Costello,
Lou Costello's daughter,
and Donnie Dunnigan, who starred in The Son of Frankenstein and was the voice of Bambi for Disney, plus many, many more stars of film and TV.
It's Monster Bash 2009, a celebration of Frankenstein, June 26th, 27th, and 28th, 2009, at the Days Inn Conference Center, Butler, PA.
For all the details, go to creepyclassics.com. That's creepyclassics.com.
Okay, we're back. What else you got, Yvonne?
Well, what I was going to talk a little bit about was in terms of, you know, it's just continuing to talk a little bit about retail. I was looking actually for perhaps I wasn't looking at probably buying it, but just to get an idea of what things were happening. I was looking at trying to purchase some appliances, okay? I just wanted, you know, because there's so many deals out there and whatever, and I said, well, let me take a look at the prices. Let me take a look what's going on. Let me see how many deals are. Well, one thing is, I mean, there were some deals, but none of them were spectacular. But the one thing I did notice that still shocked me, even though I should have, I mean, it was expected, but I guess I didn't, just to see it in real life, was the lack of financing offers for the appliances, okay? Yeah, that, and for major retailers, Best Buy, Home Depot, Lowe's, whichever, you know, they used to have blanketing everything. Well, get 12 months, zero interest, get 12 months, no payments, no interest, get nothing. Home Depot, no such offers. Lowe's, nothing. Maybe 6 months. You know, but if there were offers for the financing, they were for shorter terms. They were not. They were not no payments. They were, you know, the offers in terms of financing were really cranked way the hell down. And yeah, the biggest reason for that is because one of the biggest financiers of retail over the last couple of years, well, I would say over the last decade, has turned into be General Electric. GE Capital practically manages, I would have to say, I do believe that it is over 50% of the credit card portfolio for in-store credit cards, okay? And GE Capital has also been having to tighten because they've been having trouble raising capital in order to be able to manage their receivables portfolio. And this is definitely one of the issues that is pushing retail down. I mean, you know, people are going over and just the offers are not there anymore.
And meanwhile, you have the return of layaway. And you have, you know, bill me later also happening. I don't know if layaway ever officially go away. I don't know.
Layaway never went away.
But
certainly the popularity of it decreased.
I mean, I never. Okay, I can't admit to ever having actually used layaway.
I don't believe I ever did either.
But you know, I know a lot of people do, and especially it's something that is used by people who are lower income or who just are in tighter financial straits as a form of savings, essentially. I mean, it's basically discipline as well. You know, you're putting money away for a specific purpose. You're doing it at the store so that you can't sort of decide to do something else with it later, etc. Right.
I had a girlfriend a long time ago who was a very big user of layaway, especially for the holidays. I mean, she would start very early and just start, you know, bringing in the money little by little in order to get the items. But you know, yeah. I mean, I think that a few months ago I saw somebody use layaway at a store, and I was like, oh damn, that's a long time since I've seen that. So that's an element right now. Just the fact that financing, it's really dried up, and it's not just mortgages. It's just overall for a lot of things that normally we would have taken for granted. Okay, in terms of having financing offers. So that's something that's out there that is causing an effect. But, you know, also, well, let's face it. I mean, the number of layoffs that have been happening, I mean, it's quite staggering, you know, and even cutbacks and salary cuts and all this other stuff. And people with a fear of losing their job, you know, just this overall thing has also had the definite impact. The reduction of bonuses for people who were on big bonuses. Luxury retail got the hardest hit. Close to 40%. Luxury retail had a lot of people who were in the financial industry that were racking up massive bonuses,
and their bonuses
either completely got zero or they got far less than before.
Well, and you saw the stories this week about Google's bonuses as well. Google was also known for fairly generous bonuses. This year, they're giving all their employees a Google phone. And that's it.
Wow. 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 I'm shocked. It's been a tough environment. It's definitely been a tough environment in that sense. So, you know, 2009 doesn't hold out right now to be much better. However, I will tell you this. My sense is that given that right now, everybody is now saying that we're screwed, that everything's destroyed, but now that everybody's calling out the gloom and doom card,
then it must be the bottom.
I predict that we're closing in on the bottom. Yes, that was my point, because you know, it's I don't know why so many people are so short-sighted, or is it just that they like to be wrong? But, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, last year in August, when the financial crisis started, okay, really in earnest, that started sometime in it was last summer of 2007. I saw this and we were talking about this, and my gut reaction was, you know what, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is going to be hard. This is going to be deep. This is going to be a deep recession. Now, I will not claim to have envisioned that every bank in Wall Street are gonna go bankrupt and some of these things that happened, but I knew that it was not going to be an easy recession and that it was going to be long and it's not going to be shallow. Well, every other economist or even our dear old president, as far back as only September, somebody was making fun of him today because he was saying that the economy's strong. And, you know, the guy in a column was wondering, you know, the fundamentals are strong. He was wondering, well, shit, if the fundamentals are strong, then it must have been strictly trivial items like collapsing housing, ballooning unemployment, and vanishing corporate profits. I mean, you know, they were like, I mean, what the hell fundamentals is he talking about?
Well, one of the things I was reading about earlier this week, and I have no memory where this was. But was basically looking at the incentives for economists and other folks who talk about these things to say negative or positive things. And basically the point that was being made is that if you're an economist in a situation where you see some potential negative things going on,
right?
Basically, the risks of coming out with a very negative, gloomy, things are going to shit forecast and being wrong are high. Like if you're the doom and gloom guy who's going on TV to saying everything sucks while everybody else is saying things are good, and then you are wrong and everything's good, then you look like a fool.
Well, you get ostracized. Yeah, I know.
If you are right, there's actually very few benefits from being right.
Right.
Meanwhile, if you go along with the crowd and say everything's great, there are benefits for going along with the crowd. But if you're wrong, there are basically no consequences. And so you're incentivized if you are one of the people who are chattering about these kinds of things to go along with the crowd and say everything's great. And one of the things you don't see, and it's always fairly interesting, or at least you very rarely see, are systematic looks at the accuracy of the people who predict things. Yeah, one way or another. Like, if you go back and took, like, and every once in a while around this time of year, you do see it, where people look at what they said a year ago. But if you had a general, if you had a general tracking thing where every analyst who ever came on TV to talk about anything or on the internet or whatever, right underneath them in the little bottom third, they would show you an accuracy percentage of the things that they predicted 1 year previously. You know, that would be very interesting, because I bet you very few of them would be over 50%.
Keeping the scorecard of every guy. Well, I will call out my own scorecard, by the way, that I was wrong on one. I was wrong on oil. I called oil to be down 50%, and it beat the hell out of my prediction. It went down 75%. Okay, so I was wrong. Just thought on the how much? Yes.
If we're doing scorecards, I'll do the election. I predicted both nominees and the winner in January.
Yeah, I think I think I agreed with you at the time. I think so.
Immediately before Iowa was when I made my predictions. So
I think we did pretty good. You know, we called the election properly. We called the economy properly. I called oil down. Okay. What else? I did not profit on the oil move. I was actually scared of putting any money on the oil move, to be quite honest with you. And the reason I've been scared about putting it in oil is that I lost so much money on all my investments that, to be quite honest with you, I was just scared of risking any more capital. Okay, that's the reason why.
Mattresses are good.
Yes, and it's a lesson well learned during this year. I think that if we do a rundown of our predictions for the year, I think we did pretty damn good.
Well, speaking of predictions, let's take a break, and when we come back, let's do predictions for 2009 and then wrap it up.
Okay.
So we'll be back right after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, so predictions.
Before we go into the predictions, okay, just to talk for a little bit, I brought this up a couple of weeks ago, and the scandal has grown in proportions.
Madoff?
Yes, or Madoff, or it, Madoff.
Apparently, I was just listening to Don't Tell Me, NPR's quiz show. And apparently it actually is Madoff, because they made a joke about Madoff with the money.
All the money. So it's even better. I know. That's why I like the Madoff thing, you know, because he made off with everybody's money. I had lunch with a friend of mine here in Palm Beach, who's Jewish. And the reason I bring that up is because Bernie Madoff is also Jewish. And I will tell you that the anger – He expressed that, and I also saw this written in other articles and other places. The Jewish community's anger toward Bernie Madoff is off the charts.
Well, and apparently, I mean, I was somewhat surprised by looking at this. Apparently, disproportionately, the investors in this were of Jewish backgrounds, Jewish charities.
Yes.
I mean, there were other people affected too, but there was a very disproportionate amount here, and which seems somewhat odd to me, but anyway, go ahead.
And it was just the outrage, the sense of betrayal, I think that the word, I can't remember how exactly he expressed it, how one of us just fucked everybody. How the hell could he have the balls to do this? And I think the biggest outrage was just the thing about the charitable institutions, because he ripped off a whole bunch of charities. I think that was the biggest outrage.
And a number of them are actually having to shut down because of this.
To shut down completely. There was one charity that I had heard a lot over the last few years that gave trips to Israel to teenagers so they could get to know their homeland. Most of the money was a Madoff, and that one had to shut down completely. They were telling me over here they just had a charity auction that they regularly held to raise money for other activities, and there were so many people that my friend said that he knew 12 people who had money with Madoff that lost their money, okay? So many people got burned by this guy that the charity auction did regularly raise between $400,000 to $500,000, even up to last year. This year, they were only able to raise $100,000. Okay? It was awful. I mean, people were really shocked at how bad it was. This guy really, the impact is so far-reaching. They're still just trying to go through it, and it's just, it's utterly unbelievable. How elaborate the whole scheme was. I mean, this guy sent fake statements to every person every month, and I'm like, there were a lot of them. I mean, and I'm like, how the hell was he generating all this gobbledygook? So people would be conned into believing they had all this money. And I'm like, obviously you have to have somebody help them generate all this shit, but they still haven't had it. I don't know if you saw that he was walking down the street. Well, the press was following him, and then one of the reporters pretty much started shoving him and punching him, while he was walking down the street, especially because, people were so angry at the fact that if you saw him walking down the street, he had this smug smile on his face, a son of a bitch, and he's walking down, that people were just – and I know that I heard from a couple of people, they were just so outraged when they saw him with that fucking smug smile. They wanted to fucking kill him. I would not be surprised if this guy gets physically harmed before even any trial or anything comes up, to be quite honest with you, because of the depth of rage. There was a guy this week that committed suicide.
Yep.
apparently, who had $1.5 billion invested with this guy.
Of not only his money, but his entire family's money, and additional investors as well.
That's right. I got to tell you that the extent that this guy has reached, and it's just not U.S. but globally, I'm just stunned. I'm just stunned, you know, that he was able to sucker that many people at the same time. Unfucking real is all I can say. And what I wanted to point out is just the fact that, I mean, the Jewish community really, really feels ashamed, ripped off, hurt, all these at the same time. It really hit him really, really, really hard. You got to speak with them to in order to get it, because I was surprised at the level of the anger. Okay. I mean, I found it appalling what this guy did, but the level of the anger when I talked with him was, wow. I mean, was off the charts. It's unbelievable. So I just wanted to point that out before we went to our 2009 predictions.
Okay. So, 2009 predictions. Let's do this sort of in categories. Let's start with tech. What do you think's going on in tech in 2009?
What do I think's going to go on in tech? I think that a couple of companies are going to go under or be absorbed. I think that right now the biggest candidates for that are Sun Microsystems is on the ropes big time. So is incredibly enough, they haven't been wiped out yet, but you know they're still around. Unisys, I think that they're also going to go bust or absorbed at some point. I see that Dell, to be quite honest with you, continues slipping and sliding sideways without any direction whatsoever, to be quite honest with you. And I actually foresee. One thing that I do believe, given some of the rumors that are going around and the fact that Apple just started selling iPhones in Walmart, is that they are going to expand that lineup of iPhones in order to really fucking get a much bigger footprint of the overall cell phone market, okay?
Okay.
In total units, okay? I think that is, you know, they're going to do like they did with the iPod. We launched one model. Great. Now, let the proliferation begin. We're going to have multiple models, multiple things. They're going to start probably de-emphasizing a little bit the standalone iPods, and they're going to probably focus more on trying to sell a lot more volume simply on a different, broader range of iPhones.
I tell you, I still want an iPhone Shuffle.
I don't know. You may be getting something like that.
Hit the button and call a random person.
That'd be good.
I'll give you my tech predictions real quick. I'll second your iPhone predictions. That's definitely going to go on. I think that continuing on sort of the Apple theme, I think Steve Jobs will actually step down in 2009.
Steve Jobs will step down?
I think he will make it official. He is dramatically reducing his role. I think he'll be gone by the end of the year, at least. Or he'll move into a Bill Gates style role. He might not be gone, but he'll do what Bill Gates did.
No. Steve Jobs is not leaving Apple unless it's in a coffin. Okay. All right?
Okay. I think he is going to dramatically reduce his role. It's going to be like Bill Gates did at Microsoft, where he became
Well, I think that one of the things is that you know it depends on what you think that Steve Jobs's job is right now, because I honestly, a lot of people believe that he's like the operations person of the company, and he isn't. I mean, even at this day. I mean, that is why he has guys like Tim Cook, Phil Schiller, Jonathan Ive, and all these guys. What Steve Jobs brings to the operation is discipline in terms of technical direction, okay? if you've read any of the books about what happened to Apple after Steve Jobs left,
yep.
One of the things about it is that Apple spent a lot of money in R&D, but everybody was flailing around with projects that never came to any fruition.
Yep.
Okay? And what Steve Jobs did is when he came in is, fuck this shit, we're working on A, B, and C, D, E. Why? Because I said so, because that's what we're fucking working on. Period. None of this shit of everybody running amok, spending hundreds of millions of dollars on bullshit that maybe is cute and techie, which, by the way, Google has a tendency to do right now, but they started cutting back because, yeah, you know, okay, they've seen the pinch of the economy. But we're going to fucking work on shit that we're going to arrive at some fucking final product.
Okay.
In time. Well done.
Fine, we're running out of time, so I want to make this quick. Yeah, I think Jobs is going to dramatically reduce his role if he's not gone. I think that Apple will continue to make...
I think Sam's full of shit.
Yes, I think...
by the way, okay,
Apple will continue to make inroads in the corporate world, more so than they have before, and actually start putting some resources in that direction. In other tech stuff, I don't think the Google phone's going anywhere. What else? Anything else interesting elsewhere? Now, let's move. We've only got a few minutes left, so let's move on to politics. Political predictions. Okay.
Political predictions. Well, let's see. I don't know. I mean, this year, there are no elections this year. I think that one thing is that Obama will have sufficient political capital to make significant changes during this first year and get legislation in a couple of different fronts passed, especially stimulus and some other things regarding.
I agree. He's gonna potentially have a lot of capital going in and get a few things done, but it's not going to be. It's not going to be the things that his friends on the left wanted. And
no.
It's not going to be as much as they wanted, and his priorities are going to be elsewhere.
Well, I think he's, you know, right now the priorities right now is the economy, stupid. I mean, that's,
yep,
that's the biggest problem we have right now, you know, and we have to focus on solving that. And I think that the laser focus right now will be the Obama administration is going to be get in there and fucking, you know, fix this damn economy.
I think Obama is going to have, you know, the expected traditional honeymoon. But his problems are going to end up coming, at least initially, more from the left than from the right. The right is still trying to figure out what the hell to do with themselves, and that's going to take a little while for them to sort of articulate things. I mean, they've been doing miscellaneous, you know, let's try to get the Blagojevich thing to stick to Obama and other stuff, and they just look like idiots.
What was the Barack, the magic black guy song?
Barack the Magic Negro. And
Magic Negro, right.
Yeah,
right.
But and that's something that Rush Limbaugh did on his show way back during the primaries, and now is being distributed by the RNC, whatever. So Barack is going to have a honeymoon. He's going to get a few things done. Those things will not be the big headliners. He's not going to push through a completely new way of doing healthcare in the U.S., for instance. I don't think that's going to happen in 2009. There may be some marginal changes, but I don't think...
No, I think that there will be some significant progress in that, because I think that one of the things is, and this has been said by a few people, if you really want to bail out the auto companies, the truth of the matter is you have to solve the nation's healthcare problem. Yes. So I think that definitely there... I mean, for reasons of the economy...
I can see some changes there. I don't see the wholesale... You know, he's not.
Well, there
get...
will be movement. I don't think we're going to have a bill like in June that all of a sudden everything changes. But
right.
I think that we certainly will start moving in that direction during the year. Okay, that's what I think. And certain changes will definitely probably start to happen during the year in order to assist industry in general, which is really the ones that's having to carry the burden for it, and it's at a disadvantage to the rest of the world.
So what I do see happening though is I think Obama is going to prove to be a centrist after all, and he's mm-hmm. going to be basically he's going to lose some support on the left, but in exchange he's going to get more support from
everybody in general,
from people in the center who who voted for McCain, but weren't really rabid right-wing Republicans, were just sort of like, you know, I'm not sure about this Obama guy.
I don't know. Right.
So, yeah. And whether what that means for his net support levels, I mean, they have to go down from here. He's got like an 80% approval rating right now. I think you're going to see his base of support move further to the center, and he may push some left-wing agenda items, but he will do that sparingly and will, for the most part, be very pragmatic about his approach, trying to pick the problems that he sees and then looking for, you know, how do we solve this? And, and he is going to make some additional overtures to the Republicans to try to bring them on board on some of these things.
Right.
Okay, and we technically we're out of time, but let's go like a couple minutes longer. Economy.
We're not going to start pulling out of this thing until late in 2009. Okay? I mean, these next 6 to 9 months are going to be like shit. Right now. Obviously, Obama is putting through a stimulus plan, and what we'll do is try to stabilize some of this. The stimulus is going to be one of the biggest ever, and so therefore it will do some help. But the truth of the matter is, like everything that government or the Federal Reserve does when it relates to the economy, it doesn't mean that that just by doing something right now, it doesn't automatically translate through the economy immediately. It takes time to filter through. So therefore, the fact that we're going to have a massive public works investment. We were just talking about this yesterday. I was talking about how those projects get along and how that's going to fund somebody's company that I know. Well, yeah, they're like optimistic. Okay, we're going to get something, but shit, it's not going to be in January or February. But we know that sometime during the year we're going to get a boost from that. So it takes it takes some time for those projects to get through and to the money to start seeing the effects. So therefore, that's why I believe that we'll have a period still of that time until things stabilize somewhat. So,
okay.
I'll say $50, 50 to 60. That's going to be my range for next year.
Okay, I'm not going to try to predict economy. That's Yvonne's area. One more thing. Give me something that is an out on a limb shocker prediction.
Out of the limb shocker prediction. Vladimir Putin will commit suicide.
Okay, I'll give you one along those lines. In the next year, Osama bin Laden will be found. It'll turn out he's been living in Florida for the last 10 years.
It's a good one. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And on that note,
we're done. Thank you very much, everyone. This has been Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, etc. We love to hear from you. And in the meantime, have a good, happy new year, etc. Don't party too hard. And we will talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.